Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us for our Thursday episode. I'm going to get through a few things quickly here because we've got a lot to talk about today. We're talking some Big 12 softball with Chris Plank. Very excited for this. Softball season is almost here, and the Big 12 is loaded. D1 softball rankings premiered this week, and three Big 12 teams were in the top 10. We're going to talk about that. Talk about Texas Tech with their new coach. A lot to talk about with Chris. And then Keegan Reneau, our good friend from Sooners Wire, who will be leaving Sooners Wire, is going to join us. We'll talk some OU football, talk about some transfers in and out of the program, the new coaching hire for the tight ends, and talk a little Texas. And I've got a fun new segment called Quick Fire Questions, 10 questions for Keegan. Some have great answers, some, well, I'm disappointed in them, but that's fine. We love Keegan. Keegan's awesome. A couple things before we get to that, obviously. Follow us on Twitter at 1012podcast, TE, and the number 12, the word podcast. Okay, we got lots of fun stuff there. I'm trying to do lots of polls, tweet out polls, some relevant, some fun, some just whatever. We are on Instagram at 1012pod, TEN12POD. We had to cancel our Instagram live for this week, and I think we're going to kind of put those on hiatus for a little bit. Look, behind the scenes stuff, we push back the 1012 toddler's bedtime a bit. Doing these Thursday episodes with guests. It takes up more time than when I just had Chris and Daniel doing picks every week. So we're just going to kind of put a break on those. We'll get back to them later. Eventually, I enjoy doing them. But we will continue to post exclusive content, graphics, things from us there. So give us a follow on Instagram at 1012pod. Leave us a rating and review, especially if you are an iTunes listener, 5 stars. And tell us what you like, what you don't like. It helps spread the word about the show. We want to keep growing this show. Okay, that's the goal. The more time I can spend, the better the show can be, and I want it to be the best that it can. Like I said, we're going to talk softball. Big news for baseball. Very excited. The Big 12 has formally announced that they're going to do a regular season structure for 2021. Last we knew, it was looking like 4-game series in conference play, but according to Kendall Rogers, the Big 12 athletic directors approved a normal season structure for the 2020 season. Big 12 will play the customary 24 conference games. They'll expand travel rosters to 30 players. We're seeing some things about non-conference schedules coming out. Basically, other teams are releasing non-conference schedules. Some neutral site kind of tournaments are coming out, so we're learning things about different teams. Now we just wish the Big 12 would hurry up and get us some schedules. I want a schedule. I want baseball schedules. I want to know when I can finally go to Obrate and cheer on Oklahoma State. More importantly, check out their amazing new stadium. There's other things that I'm pretty sure we should talk about, but I don't remember what they are, and it's pretty late on a Wednesday night. And as I said, we have a loaded show, as you can tell by the how long this show is. So without further ado, follow us on Twitter, follow us on the gram, rating and review, and let's get to it. All right, so we talked a little Big 12 baseball last week. This week, it's time to talk softball. Chris Plank joining us to talk a little Big 12 softball today. Chris, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me. You're hitting on one of my passions here. I love talking softball, and I think we're in for every season is unique in the pandemic era, but maybe even more so than we've seen in years past with these monster rosters for these college softball teams this spring.
Yeah, so why don't we just start there? I mean, obviously, the 2020 season got cut short. It seemed like things were going good, and COVID hits, and it all gets canceled, and so the NCAA has allowed everyone to basically get an extra year of eligibility if they so choose to use it. It's a similar thing that baseball is dealing with this year. So from your perspective, looking at the Big 12 teams that play softball, Is there a team or two in particular where you say they had a ton of players come back and are really going to benefit from that this year?
Obviously, I would tell you Oklahoma. That's what I cover the closest. And, you know, it sounds borderline atrocious to say this, but maybe they were one of those teams that, you know, the pandemic and shutting down the season might have actually come at a time when they were dealing with a lot of injury issues. You know, G. Juarez had just underwent surgery and she was going to miss the rest of the year. They were counting a lot on Shannon Sale to shoulder the load. They had just lost their starting center fielder to an injury. So there were a lot of injury issues for Oklahoma that had affected them as we were hitting the stretch of Big 12, the start of Big 12 softball season, and what was a big weekend looming against Texas. So I would say I'd put Oklahoma in that list of a team that, you know, is in really good roster shape based on those who have been given that extra year. And kind of, you know, Nicole Mendez is a great example too. Their captain center fielder who had and right fielder, first baseman, wherever she can play, pitch sometimes, who's on Team Mexico. So she had, you know, she had missed the majority of the season and was just starting to come back. So you get her back for a full season. And I think, you know, a team like Baylor, you know, with a Gia Redoni and a Goose McClellan, who, you know, get an extra year of eligibility. And I just don't, honestly, as we go through the season, I think we'll find out a little bit more who it benefits by who is truly back, right? I mean, right now some of these rosters are still coming together out of the fall and into the early practice session. You know, Oklahoma hasn't even started back classes yet, but they've started working out. So it's going to be fascinating to me to see just how these rosters look, you know, and kind of what those numbers look like with those who are projected to come back this year. But it's definitely going to be unique. And, you know, just one quick final point on this. I think the NCAA was trying to do right in saying all these baseball and softball players that, you know, have their season cut short, they'll get an extra year of eligibility. But I think in the long run, man, it puts a lot on the coaching staff, you know, and a lot on these universities. I mean, Barry Alvarez had to come out and say, we're not giving you that extra year of eligibility. We can't afford it on the scholarship side. And now you have roster management and the portal lighting up like crazy. And then freshmen who are come in or are commits are like, hey, do I still have a spot? What does this roster look like? So I think in trying to do right, the NCAA create a lot of roster issues for this team person, a lot of these teams personnel wise.
Yeah. And that's something that's going to be an issue for the next few years as teams try to deal with rosters and deal with players who, you know, you have these incoming freshmen who aren't going to get to see the field as much in pretty much every sport as they might have in past years. And it's not just softball, it's baseball, softball, football, every sport. I think the NCAA made the right move. I think we'll agree with it, but you know, there's always the unintended consequences of doing what we believe is the right thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how teams handle it. I think that will be another thing. It sounds great to get these players back, but I do think it's going to be interesting to see which teams manage the rosters to the best of their abilities. Because you may have a loaded roster, you may have a great loaded roster, but if you don't manage that talent and manage those players efficiently and effectively, it may be a kind of a zero-sum game of, great, you have them, but it hasn't turned into a benefit for some teams as it might for others.
Yeah, and you also have to deal with people coming in, right? Mm-hmm. People that are coming in that haven't played yet, you know, and I know that's not the proper way to say recruits, that's people you have signed, but you've got to worry about future recruiting classes too. You know, it's again, I'm not knocking the NCAA. I think they're trying to do the right thing. I just think that they kind of stopped and put the onus on the universities, which is fine, but you know, in this time, it really makes things challenging. And you know, I was thinking about Oklahoma's roster and I was going through it. There's like 23, 24 players on their roster. I was looking at Oklahoma State's roster. There's like 20 players on Oklahoma State's roster, and then some. So, you know, it's just roster management is going to be so key for not just 2021, but beyond. So you can keep your recruiting classes in place. So you can keep your people that are there happy that you won around, and you don't end up getting in a situation where you upset them.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, obviously Oklahoma going to be able to benefit this year from everything that's going on. I hate saying like benefited from COVID, but it's more benefiting from the NCAA's decision to allow everyone an extra year of eligibility, I think is the better way of putting it. So it sounds a whole lot better from, you know, PR standpoint. Oklahoma preseason, no, that was for 2020. What year? Where? This is 2021.
That's right. Yeah. I did the same thing when I was prepping for this. I looked at a lot of 2020 rosters, and I was like, wait a minute. She's not here. Or did she transfer in? Yeah, it's confusing time, man. I feel you.
Because I was looking, I was like, yeah, what was the Big 12 preseason poll? Okay, it was – oh, wait, no, that's 2020. We're in 2021. So let's ignore that. D1 softball, who I think is easily one of the best soft websites to cover collegiate softball, put out their top 25 this week. They had Oklahoma number two overall, which I think kind of reflects your point on Oklahoma, which is a perennial powerhouse program, period. Let's just acknowledge that out the gate. But Oklahoma, not the only top 10 team from the Big 12. Texas came in at number 9, Oklahoma State came in at number 10, and Baylor at 19, the other top 25 team from the Big 12. And the Big 12 has been a good softball conference. Easily. We all know the SEC is really good. We all know that the Pac-12 is solid, and there's some really fun G5 schools. I love Olympic sports because you see powers in that we wouldn't expect to see, you know, because of football. But looking at this season, how good is the Big 12 going to be this year? Or is this a situation where Oklahoma, Texas, Oklahoma State, who we all expect to be good, especially based off how they were last year, are going to be so dominant? Maybe it's a situation where the top is really dominant and the rest of the conference is good, but is beaten down by that top tier talent.
Yeah, no, I think that's been the big challenge for the Big 12 over the last 5-6 years is that Oklahoma has been so good. Texas had struggled, you know, quite a bit to get back to where they once were. And, you know, there wasn't really, you know, Oklahoma State had filled that void just a bit. And Smith, the Shaw was a heck of an addition to them from the transfer market. Baylor and what Glenn Moore had put together has been always consistently good at Baylor. But that C word, consistency, had not been there with anyone else outside of Oklahoma. You know, Baylor was headed towards a really rough season last year and was in the midst of one the year before. So it had been tough to find maybe that second team behind Oklahoma. But, you know, Mike White, now heading into his third season at Texas, this is a guy that has done some incredible things throughout his career, pretty special head coach. I think that they've got a loaded roster at Texas this year. And I know that Miranda Ellis opting out, maybe that might have changed the way some people view them in their D1 softball top 25 poll if they would have known that Ellis was opting out before they voted. But, you know, they have that. And we still haven't seen her pitch in Shaylin O'Leary. I don't think she pitched against Oklahoma last time these two teams faced in 2019, I believe, whenever we went down to Austin. I don't think they ended up seeing her. And then, of course, the season was shut down right before OU and Texas were to play last year. So you have Shaylin O'Leary, who's pretty special. Then you look up and down that Texas roster, and it's all the names you know. You know, it's the Janae Jeffersons of the world, the players that have been there consistently. So, yeah, I think when you look at the Big 12, it's Oklahoma, it's Texas. I think Baylor's back. Giovedoni's healthy. Goose McGlon. Glenn Moore's a heck of a head coach. I am so intrigued by Oklahoma State because I just don't know. You know, here they've got a couple of graduate players who I think are going to end up doing a nice job for him. And Gabby Sprang, the pitcher, and Carrie Everly, the pitcher, the Tennessee and Vautech transfers. So, you know, those are to me, the four teams: Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Texas. You know, those are the four teams that I think are all going to be really good. But then you add a bit of a wild card, right? In what Jamie Pinkerton's done the last couple of years at Iowa State, and Texas Tech got off to a whale of a start a couple seasons ago under Adrian Gregory. Now, you know, Coach Gregory's out. They bring in Sammy Ward, who was an incredible program builder at Loyola Marymount. You know, this, I think you have four, you have, in my mind right now, two elite teams in the Big 12, even with Miranda Ellis's opt-out in Oklahoma and Texas. You have two really intriguing rosters in what Baylor and Oklahoma State have. And then in what Tech and Iowa State, you have these wild cards. Now, no offense to Kansas, but they're still building, and I think they're getting some young talent there. They're in a tough spot right now, fighting an uphill battle. They'll beat some teams they're not supposed to throughout the season, but they're still going. But to me, right now, as I'm sitting here, I feel good about five teams from the Big 12 potentially making a postseason and a sixth being a problem. So this is going to be a fascinating couple of weeks leading up to the season to really see how these rosters shape up. And then, you know, who's healthy, who opts out, who stays in. Is there anyone else that's going to hit the transfer portal? I don't know. But I'll just tell you right now, I still think regardless of what happens between now and then, Texas and Oklahoma are your two big dogs. And there is not too terribly steep of a drop off when you get to 3 and 4.
Yeah, it's really interesting. With only 17, you just say, well, it feels like four, pretty much barring massive injuries or just crazy stuff, like four locks for the NCAA tournament, at least for regionals. And getting five in, you know, whether that's Iowa State or Texas Tech, would be huge for a 7-team conference. I know the SEC is awesome. They've got all these different teams. I think sometimes we overstate how good larger conferences are just because, oh, they got nine teams out of 16. Yeah, well, the Big 12 can send 5 of 7, 4 of 7. I think it's more impressive. And knowing that the Big 12 can still send multiple teams to Oklahoma City when you have so few, I think it speaks to how good the Big 12 is at softball and how much the conference cares about the sport.
Yeah, and there you go. You know, how much the conference and then the schools have played in the conference. And you brought up the SEC, and they, as a conference, each team made a commitment to upgrading their facilities and really over the last 20 years saying, hey, this could be a nice addition to our sports portfolio, if you will, right? This could be something that, you know, we realize that, I don't want to get too carried away, like a cash cow, but this is something that could end up making some money for our schools. And this is something that, listen, will help, you know, broaden our overall portfolio. So the SEC really committed to it, right? They look at the facility that Florida just opened up this past season. Look at the commitment Auburn has made and some of their coaching hires over the last couple of seasons. So you segue that and you see what they're doing in the SEC and you realize, the Big 12 has been doing that. Now, is it taking some time to get there? Sure. Oklahoma is still working on trying to get everything finished up with its new facility and get its new stadium built. And that's been a bit of a process. And just when you feel like you're getting a little traction, COVID-19 hits and changes everything from a, you know, just overall mindset perspective, right? You go from, let's build this new stadium, let's get things going, to, okay, what can we do to make sure that this sport continues to survive and thrive? Oklahoma State just built a brand-new baseball facility, and from everything I've come to understand, they're going to be able to shift softball over to where baseball was and use some of their stuff, and that's going to be great for OSU. Kansas has a brand-new stadium that they just built the last couple of years in a facility that's awesome that's off-campus for Kansas softball and Kansas track and Kansas tennis is over there. You know, Iowa State has a really cool facility for their softball program. So my point is, in kind of laying out what you said, you've seen an investment into the Big 12 and softball, and it comes from not just the success of the Oklahomas and the Texases and the Oklahoma States of the world, but it comes from these universities realizing, hey, this is something that can enrich the student-athlete mindset. This is good to put a women's sport like this on a platform like it deserves. And, I mean, bottom line here, people watch. You know, people watch. So I'm really excited about the commitment that we've seen. I hope that we continue to build and grow towards Oklahoma getting its new stadium built sooner rather than later. And I think you'll continue to see projects grow throughout this conference.
Yeah, you know, to your point of people watch, I do think people care. You know, Oklahoma State, once they were good and you could tell that Gajewski was building something, you know, 2020 was the second straight season they had a sellout for season tickets for softball. Like, this idea that people don't care about women's sports or don't care about anything outside of football, I just don't think it's true. It may not have the care and the size. You may not fill, you're not going to fill up a 20,000 person, you know, stadium maybe, but I do think there is a solid and real commitment to programs when they are successful. And it, I know we say these sports don't generate money, and I get that. But I do think that they matter and that they should matter. And I love that as an Oklahoma State fan, I love that the Cowgirl softball team is good. I love following them. It's fun and exciting. I think it speaks to, it's really nice to have a not only a school, but conferences that care about having robust athletic departments and caring about committing to more than just football. We all love football, but caring about the other sports, like I enjoy knowing as an Oklahoma State fan that from the beginning of soccer football season through the end of softball baseball season, I'm going to have some sort of Oklahoma State team to watch and cheer for that's going to be successful at the sport that they play.
Absolutely. I mean, preach. And, you know, I think that's success is the key here. I mean, you don't want to just put a team out there for the sake of putting a team out there. No. You want to be good. And I think that's what you see in, well, let's take, you're talking about Oklahoma State and what Kenny Gajewski has done. What do they do whenever they're looking for a pitching coach? They don't just say, hey, go get who you can afford. You know, they go get a guy who was a very successful coach in the Division I ranks in John Bartfell from the University of Tulsa. And they make him the – and I love Coach Bartfell. I'm so excited to see what he can do with that Oklahoma State pitching staff. Look at Texas Tech whenever Adrian Gregory is fired because of the way that program was being handled. What do they do? Do they just say, oh, let's bring someone in to try – no, they go out and they hire a big-time name in Sammy Ward. So, I mean, Jamie Pinkerton's hired Iowa State. You know, there's a guy that was the head coach at Tulsa and at Arkansas too. So the investment that they've made in coaching is big because, like you said, you don't want to just look forward to it because, oh, it's softball, so we're good. You want to look forward to it because, oh, we're going to go out there and we're a really good team. We're going to take care of business. So I'm pretty excited about the level of play that we're seeing. You know, is it the depth of what they have in say, the SEC? Maybe not. But we're looking at a team that's only seven teams, and you and I have talked about the possibility of four being locked to the postseason and maybe a fifth. That's an incredible percentage of teams getting into the postseason.
Agreed. So let's touch on Texas Tech just here for a second. Obviously, don't need to get into what happened with your previous head coach with Gregory, but you, as you said, Texas Tech went out and hired a heck of a coach in Sammy Ward, the previous who was the head coach at Loyola Marymount, where she had a lot of success, was the West Coast Conference coach of the year three times. What do you think is a realistic expectation for Texas Tech, and kind of what are some of your thoughts here on Coach Ward?
Yeah, we had a chance because Oklahoma had gone out west to play against Loyola Marymount rather regularly, so I had a chance to watch Sammy Ward's teams play. And you know, again, it's not always going to be the easiest when you're competing for talent with the UCLAs and the Cals of the world. But they always had ballers, man, and you knew you were going to get a tough matchup anytime you went up against a Sammy Ward coach team. Here's the key for me with Tech, you know, and everything kind of runs together. So there's a part of me that's like, wait, was that 2020 or was that 2019? But Erin Edmondson had herself a heck of a start. And I believe it was 2019, and had really been pitching well. But when Tech got into conference play, it was almost as if familiar eyes started seeing her, and she got hit pretty hard. I think that there was, you know, a matchup that she had against Washington where she shut down Washington. So I'm so intrigued to see where Erin Edmondson is, if indeed she's going to take advantage of that extra year of eligibility, and what Sammy's been able to do, what Coach Ward has been able to do to bring in talent. Because, like I said, you know, that's a fringe team right now in potentially making the postseason. Again, like you said, I don't know what happened with Adrian Gregory, but I'll tell you what, if she was back, you know, knowing kind of what her roster looked like and how she had coached, I probably would have had them up there as a team that's going to give fits to the Texases and the Oklahoma States of the world. But I just don't know, you know, right? I guess we're all going to find out whenever they get things rolling. And, you know, maybe we'll see a schedule by the time that this podcast posts. I don't know. But I'm going to be willing to bet that Sammy Ward's going to have her team showcased as much as they'll allow her to travel out west and make sure that eyes can get on them to say, hey, I'm coaching now here. I can still develop you like I did on the West Coast. Come to Lubbock and check it out. I think it's going to be a fascinating fit.
Yeah, so let's wrap up there. Obviously, the season kind of expected to start here in a little over 3 weeks. That kind of Valentine's Day weekend seems to be the start date I've seen. Now, as far, we haven't had a conference schedule yet for the Big 12. I know the SEC's put theirs out, and they just decided on what they wanted to do with baseball on Tuesday. So of course, softball probably similar situation. I would expect we get a conference schedule, if not this week, the next. You feel like you'd like to get that out before, you know, week of. What are you kind of expecting as far as non-conference? Do you feel like most of the Big 12 teams are going to stay closer to home? Or do you feel like teams are, like you mentioned with Texas Tech, trying to go out west? Do you think teams will try and treat this a little more normal than I might expect with COVID being what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe for each team, and this is just my speculation, I think you might see one flight in their non-conference schedule, if even that. I think that I don't think you're going to see many teams going to California, if any, this year. So I doubt you'll see that. I would feel pretty confident in saying I don't think Oklahoma is going to play in California this year. I don't know for certain, but if I'm a guessing man here, I don't think you're going to see anyone playing at a tournament at LMU or where all have we gone in the past, Fullerton or even out to the Mary Nutter Classic. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think they'll still try to find ways to get, you know, as west as travel will allow. I think you're going to see a lot of trips that you can bus to, if you will. And I think you're going to see as competitive as of a schedule as you can. Now, I would say this, keep an eye on Oklahoma City, because I think with the Hall of Fame Stadium and, you know, now it's completed, the fields around it have always been serviceable and playable. So it wouldn't surprise me, after having lost a year of the Women's College World Series, to see a situation where maybe teams are more apt to kind of migrate and play a couple of tournaments there, because, you know, in Big 12 country, it's a bus ride for just about everybody, maybe outside of Iowa State. But yeah, to me, I think you're going to see teams be really smart about how they schedule them. And in that, you know, you schedule and you just don't know. Is the flexibility going to be there if you lose, not necessarily lose on the field, but can't play a game because of COVID? Is there going to be flexibility in the Big 12 schedule where maybe you can add another game? I don't know. But it's going to be fascinating, because we all know what we've dealt with throughout the college football season and now into college basketball. But I think Diamond Sports are going to be a fascinating case study in trying to play as challenging of a schedule as you can with as minimal amount of travel as you can possibly put together.
No, I agree. Like, I love non-conference. That's why I'm excited that baseball chose to go with the regular season. As much fun as four-game series would have been in baseball, non-conference is fun. I think it benefits teams, especially, you know, you look at a Big 12, you've got seven teams. There's not a lot of wins to go around, especially when you know the Oklahomas and the Texases are going to get a lot of them. So having those non-conference games against quality opponents to help boost your resume is going to be really big if the Big 12 wants to get five teams into the postseason this year. So I think that's big. I would love to see Oklahoma City play host with everything there and the stadiums there, and even at Tulsa, just some more neutral situations where you can bring teams together there. I think that's a great idea.
By the way, real quick on that, you've had Oklahoma, you know, work together with Tulsa and Oklahoma State in the past to put together, you know, as much as they possibly can, mm-hmm. As far as trips, maybe as a little triangle from Stillwater, maybe even a square, Stillwater, Tulsa, Oklahoma City, and Norman. You know, there's easily drivable games, and you can get in, you know, 4, 8, 12, 16 games there if you want. But we'll see. I think it's going to be a lot of busing for the Big 12 this year, non-conference.
Agreed. Chris, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate joining the show today. For everybody who wants to check out the work you do covering the Sooners and just Big 12 sports in general, where can they do so?
Oh, SiriusXM Big 12 Radio, channel 375. I get a chance to fill in. In fact, as soon as I hang up here, I'm getting ready to do a show this afternoon with Gabe and Fran. Sooner Sports Podcast for OU fans, Soonersports.com/podcast. And hey, we'll be all in on softball over the next few weeks. So give me a follow on Twitter @PlankShow and @OU on the air. It's going to be fun, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the season starting. Can't wait to get you back on again and see where we are maybe midseason.
Call me anytime, man.
The Highball Network is your new home for podcasts that meet you at the intersection of sports and entertainment. Featuring personalities like Christine Butterfield, Madison Morris, Randy Heights, and Ryan Chapman, the Highball Network will keep you entertained while delivering high-level analysis across the entire spectrum of sports. The Winning Women podcast preaches female empowerment and covers stories of perseverance and breakthroughs for women in sports. Sideline Warning delivers fast-paced commentary on sports all across the national landscape, complete with plenty of roasts. And for you Sooner fans out there, the Heisman Park Rangers covers the entirety of OU athletics, from football to softball and everything in between. Like the Highball Network on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @Highball Network to stay up to date on all our latest projects. You can find Highball Network podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Now, look, we don't talk a lot of OU football on this pod, not because we don't like the Sooners, but because we know we don't have a huge Sooner following, and I'm not going to bend over backwards to try and get every Sooner fan to want to listen to the show. Guys, I like you. I do. Just understand you're not the easiest fan base to get on board for other things that aren't specifically OU related. However, I do enjoy talking about the Sooners, and when we do, there's one guy in particular I like to bring on the show to do so. And since he is going to be leaving his current station, OU-specific station, Keegan Renaud, soon to be formerly of Sooners Wire, joining us again today. Keegan, welcome back, man.
You know, I always have a good time. It's always to get to broaden my horizons and step out into different realms. I've been posting on the Inside Texas board just because I love snarking back and forth with who we all love. But so I've been broadening my horizons. So this is going to be good for me. This is going to be another experience. It's going to be great.
Very good. Very good. Well, so you have not unveiled what is your next step for you. Before we hop in, you are going to keep your Patreon going, right? Now you have an OnlyFans. Is that right? I forget.
Something along those lines. Yeah. I haven't worked out in like 6 months, but if you want to come check me out, come check me out. But no, we're on the Inside OU podcast with Brady Trantham and I. We have a Patreon page where I break down film of Oklahoma. We do podcasts on there as well. So like I'll get guests and this and that. It's $4 a month for the podcast part. And then if you want to get podcast and the film, it's just $5. So, and there's gonna be a lot more stuff coming to that. So I'm excited to see how we kind of build that as well. But it's going to be, yeah, I'll be on the podcast throughout the whole 2021 season. So it's this, I'm going to be more of an outsider looking in with inside information, I guess, is the best way to put it.
You're going to guess on your own pod. That's a fun, that would be a weird thing to do, but I like it. Yeah, no, your game breakdown stuff is, you'd be like a guest on your own pod.
Kinda, I guess. I mean, Philip, you know more than, you know as well as I know. I could tell you basically about what's happening with OU. It's just a matter of being able to do it. In what capacity can I talk about things? So this is a great avenue for that. And hopefully, now that I'm off the beat, people are will talk a little bit more. Obviously, it's the hope. We'll see what kind of happens, but
fingers crossed. Well, we're just going to kind of ramble here a little bit, but I do have a few Oklahoma specific things I want to talk about regarding the off season. First, let's take a little trip into the transfer portal. A couple of things to talk about. First, at the quarterback position, obviously Tanner Mordecai and Chandler Morris both entering the transfer portal. Mordecai now going to SMU. Chandler Morris headed off to TCU, which left the OU quarterback room a little bit bare outside of Spencer Rattler, which is understandable. I mean, Rattler's got the job, and he's going to have the job until he decides to leave. So if you're a guy who wants to start, the only way you're really going to start at Oklahoma at this point is barring injury. However, Oklahoma did happen to reach into the portal and pull out a quarterback of their own. Micah Bowens of Penn State saw this news recently, kind of talked to me about where he fits in here, and it felt like a little bit of a surprise. I hadn't really seen much talk of Oklahoma and him being connected, and all of a sudden he's committed to Oklahoma.
Yeah, it surprised me too, and it's something that, you know, you need an arm, but at the end of the day, like, I don't know if this guy could, if it comes, push comes to shove, it's this guy's your quarterback. I don't know if that's what you want. So it sounds like it may not be a scholarship situation. We'll kind of see how that unfolds. It sounds like he may just be a preferred walk-on type and earns a scholarship later on. But, you know, he, like I put this out on Twitter, but it's like watching Spencer Sanders mixed with Jalen Hurts playing football. Like, take Jalen's arm and his body type and then way Spencer Sanders plays the game. Like, that's how this kid is. So I don't really see him being a, you know, an impact guy, maybe just a backup for 4 years, becomes a coach kind of deal, which is what's been a theme for some of those preferred walk-on kids at Oklahoma. So we'll see if that's the route they end up taking. But it shocked me as well. So it kind of caught me off guard.
The big name, the guy we talked about a lot, or needs to be talked about. It's not often you see a former five-star guy leave an SEC program and head into the Big 12.
But here no, you do. You do when it's Tennessee this year, Phillip.
Well, that's – no. Look, Tennessee's having a fire sale. Like, everyone's on their way out the door. We're gonna have one of those scenes where the office is completely empty here real quick. But Oklahoma landing an impact tackle – sure. Much to the chagrin of Texas A&M fans, which is really fun. Wanya Morris coming in from Tennessee. Talk to me about how he's going to fit in here and what kind of impact he can have on what we expect to generally be a really good offensive line group.
So he kind of comes in with the same questions that Orlando Brown did in terms of, like, he's got some work with his technique and fundamentals and stuff. He's a guy probably cut some weight. but he plays at that same nastiness. He's probably more athletic. He's more built to be a more prototypical left tackle. Orlando is so massive and so physical and so nasty, overcome some of those things. What you're getting in Morris is a 6'5", 320-pound left tackle, long arms. I mean, when you're talking about what you want your first tackle to an NFL draft like, it's this kid. It's just a matter of now putting those puzzle pieces together and using the tools that he has and getting the most out of it. And I, you know, going to a place that's been able to do it with guys like that before, and I think it's a perfect fit for him. I don't get me wrong, Josh Henson, we all know how good of a coach he is, and what he got out of those guys down in A&M this year was impressive. But I think, you know, when you're talking about as well plugging into a great situation, like Oklahoma's schedule is really easy. Like, don't get me wrong, like going down to Texas A&M and this and that, but like he's got a chance to be a part of a team that's got a chance to go to the national championship game, and it's a very clear picture. So he's going to get a lot of pub. He's got a big future ahead of him. I think he may only play 1 year at Oklahoma, Phillip. Like, I'm not sure that he's a guy that's going to be at Oklahoma for a long time. This in terms of how he fits. So Oklahoma obviously was athletic at left tackle when Anton Harrison came in the game with Adrian Ealy on the right side. I think Morris slides in at left. You swing Harrison over to right. I think left guard is going to be Marquise Hayes. Center will be Chris Murray. And then right guard is going to be either Tyrese Robinson or Andrew Rames. So they're going to be pretty good up front. They're going to have a chance to. And adding Morris to that conversation, just I think, like, whenever you're talking about Oklahoma for next year, like, I know there's people are like, okay, well, you know, wide receivers dropped a lot of passes. The running back situation is a little questionable. This, that, whatever. Like, the tackle position and the offensive line in Oklahoma has to get better. And Wanya Morris is a puzzle piece to that, that I think completely changes, you know, what we think about what Oklahoma's offensive line is going to be for next year. And if, you know, you with the group they got on defense in that front six, Phillip, if they can get that offensive line turning, they should dominate the trenches every game. And I, you know, like, until you go play one of those big guys in Ohio State or Clemson or Alabama, I mean, you're going to have the talent on your side. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I'm trying to treat everything this year like people complaining, like, oh, well, this guy didn't do this and this guy didn't do that. And at some point, I think people are so used to COVID that we almost forget that COVID is a real thing that happened this year and killed your offseason and killed development. And I think it was way too hard for players to really develop during the season, because if you get COVID during the season, there's no developing. You're going to take time off. So I think this is kind of one of those years, and why everyone got a bonus year, that if you're mad about players not showing up at the start of the season and getting better and then continuing to improve as the season went on, like, folks, this isn't a normal year. We really can't think of it that way. So, like, I'm not super concerned. Obviously, running back, wide receiver, as you mentioned. I just, like, let's see how things look next year, what we hear out of spring ball in 2021 before we all just kind of get super worried about things headed into next fall.
Well, and breaking news while we're on this podcast, Larry Scott is out as the Pac-12 commissioner.
Finally?
So, man, now who is the Pac-12 going to hire, Phillip, that is going to try and come poach all the big in the next 5 years? That's the key.
Man, I don't.
They got to get someone in there. Oklahoma and Texas are going to be waiting for an offer from someone. So we'll see. Oklahoma looking, and you watch, Oklahoma's going to go to the Big Ten. It's going to be nuts, but they're researching.
Hold on. Stop. Like, what are we doing here? Are we making a joke?
Oh, we're doing it.
I'm just
no, kind of. But at the end of the day, though, like, the Pac-12 is going to die. Like, if they don't try to go get Oklahoma and Texas, or at least one of the two, the Pac-12 is going to be dead. So I, you know, like, I guess I kind of give away some inside info, but yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma, when it's push comes to shove, is going to end up going to Big Ten when it's all, like, all this is over, which I don't know. I don't think that should surprise anybody. If you pay attention to what some people on Twitter say about, if you look at the, how do I say this? If you look at the leaves and the breadcrumbs that Oklahoma is leaving out in terms of, okay, we want to be a research university. We want our brand and our research and our university to be great. Well, Nebraska didn't make it almost to the Big Ten, right? Because of the AAU deal, because their school, in theory, wasn't really that good as a school. Oklahoma's trying trying to improve there for a reason. So there you go. There's my two cents. Conference. There's your conference realignment talk. You're not going to get me for another 2 months or whatever it is.
We're not going. I'm not falling down that rabbit hole because we'll get lost. And I don't. We're going to have to save this. We got plenty of off-season content time to fill. So
there you go.
We'll talk
You're
about
right.
this again in June. This is like a 2 month ahead, 3 month, 6 month ahead tease. Let's go with that. Okay. Last little thing before we have some just, you know, I guess we could talk about the new hire, Shane Beamer's replacement, Joe John Finley. It's a great name, Joe John. Joe John Finley. Sometimes two first names works. Sometimes it doesn't. Joe John is good. Tell me a little bit about the former OU player who's now back in Norman on the coaching staff.
Well, I think from one part, you got to mention recruiting with the staff Texas is putting together with all the Alabama blood. Like I think it's as blatant as obvious what everything's trying to go down there. Well, Oklahoma combats that with this, a guy that coached under Jimbo Fisher, did a really good job, the best tight ends in the country in the Weidermeyer kid, then goes to Ole Miss and coaches under Lane. And he's recruited there as well, recruited well there. He signed, I believe, a top 100 player, a tight end that's going to go to Ole Miss. So he recruits well. And I'm trying to be as tongue-in-cheek about that as I possibly can, right? But like, it's important. It's so important. I mean, Oklahoma gets a kid that's basically committed to them, not committed to them, when Kamar Wheaton and Alabama could come in literally from what I understand the night before, like Kamar Wheaton called them, was like, hey, you guys have any room? And they're like, oh yeah, we could definitely take room to take you. You know, it's like, okay. So Oklahoma, if they want to continue to take the strides they want to take as a program, they got to be able to recruit at that level with Alabama and now what Texas is going to do. And you're not, you know, you can't be losing whenever you're basically putting all your chips in on these kids and you go 1-for-6, I believe is what Oklahoma's out on the recruiting trail. Like that stuff just can't happen. So adding Joe John Finley is a bonus in that regard. And then you just want to talk about just the fit. I think it's important to note, like, I'm not a huge fan of OU hiring former OU guys. Like, I don't think that, like, you can't fall in love with that because it's easy. There's so many of them out there. But with Joe John Finley, you get a guy he was a part of some really good teams at Oklahoma. He gets it. He won the Cotton Bowl and then put the golden hat on his head. He understands Oklahoma to a T. He's been, you know, he was a part of one of the best offenses in college football this year down there at Ole Miss, was the passing game coordinator. I don't know if that label was to get a raise or some more money. But another thing to point out, too, he's been a part of different offenses. So I have two more things. But on this one, he's been with Jimbo and A&M, which is a pro-style offense. And he's also been now at Ole Miss, which is definitely a more raid, air raid variant kind of offense. So he's been at both of those places. And then lastly, we're starting to find out that Barry Odom's a pretty good football coach, right? Now the defensive coordinator at Arkansas, who helped Missouri win a lot of football games that people didn't expect them to after they basically almost decimated their football program. Well, the connection, which Lincoln, Jamar Cain, and Shane Beamer did not have connections to Oklahoma. So it's not surprising if they went out of the box and not had a guy that had any Oklahoma connections at all. But Brian Odom, now the linebackers coach at Oklahoma, who has developed Kenneth Murray and now David Agwebu, who looks to be a first-round, maybe a guy that's going to be scratching to be a first-round pick next year. Him and Joe John Finley work together at Missouri under Brian Odom. And Barry Odom, gave Joe John Finley and Brian the same – that was their first jobs. So they're all cut from the same cloth. And I believe Odom and Grinch are connected. And I believe it's through Pinkel at Missouri, if I'm putting it all together right. So it's all connected in the same. And I think it's interesting, though, Philip, that Oklahoma's going that route. So Oklahoma's going they get the culture that they have now on defense, and it's kind of from that Odom-Pinkel tree. And you keep adding more of that blood to the system. I want to say I think I'm thinking of this right, I hope. But I think Grinch worked on whatever. Regardless, they all the culture, everything they're wanting to do is the same mentality, same mindset, whatever. And I think Joe John Finley also fits that. So there you go. There's your long, short answer on Joe John being hired at Oklahoma. And I think when you get a synthesis and as good as that, you can't complain.
Yeah. So Grinch was a graduate assistant at Missouri 2002 to 2004. Then he was the safeties coach 2012 to 2014 before he became the DC up at Washington State. So yes, the Missouri connection is there.
Weird Missouri, huh? Someone made a joke. Did you see me retweet that yesterday? Someone made a joke with me and was like, "Wired, Oklahoma's turning into Texas Tech East or Texas Tech North," and he said, "Woke, Oklahoma's turning into Missouri West." Why Missouri? Like, that's crazy. Like, when you go back and really think about it, like, Missouri is a place that I just would not have thought that, you know, good, these, all these lines of coaches are coming from Pinkel and Odom.
I don't know, man, but, you know, I think Odom was I still was shocked when they fired Odom. I didn't think he did that bad of a job at Missouri. Like, I think Missouri is what it is. Missouri kind of, like, Pinkel overachieved at Missouri, and I think Pinkel did a good job.
But they were number one, right, at one point?
They were number – yeah. That was the year that we'd have had a national championship between Missouri and West Virginia. Had West Virginia not lost to a, like – 5-win Pitt and Missouri beating Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game, but then we got the 2-loss LSU into the national championship because both those teams lost on like championship weekend, and that was 2007. It's the weirdest year of college football of all time, 2007.
Well, that's a little. I was like, just, you know, figuring out that, you know, 4 verts on Madden or on Xbox was great to use in football. So give me a pass there. I don't. If give me about 2010 on, I've got a pretty good recollection.
I forget how old I am and how young all the rest of you are. It's fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
It's all right.
No, that's not a shot at you. That's a shot at how old I'm getting. So you talked about Texas. Let's talk Texas for a minute. No. Because I want to do this since with you. I get people are going to be like, that. We do this every time. Texas, they're not back. And I get it. I absolutely get it. I understand. I get it. But the point here and the difference between what's happening now, and again, Sark's got to prove some things as far as coaching goes. He's got to prove some things. He's got to prove that he can run a program like Texas. We saw what happened at USC. I'm not bringing up the alcoholism to knock him for it. I'm just saying I do think you have to include that into why the level of success they had at USC was the level of success he had at USC, because at the same time he was drinking the way he was. And no offense, no one does a great job when they're drinking a whole lot. I don't, unless you all think that your
speak
papers
yourself,
you wrote in college
speak
were
for
the,
yourself.
The best.
Yeah, speak for yourself.
I am nothing if not beautifully articulate and a master craftsman of the word when I am at least mildly inebriated. There's all my 25 cent words I've used up my bag. But what we're seeing Sark do that Herman didn't do, he didn't, Herman brought his guys in, that I don't think Charlie Strong really did either, was the thing that you should do at the University of Texas. Not just bring your boys along. You go out, use the resources you have available to you, and say, I'm going to do what Bama does. I'm going to go get the best of the best of the best, the guys who are out there who are going to recruit their butts off and coach. Because look, it's very nice. It's nice that Texas recruits in the top 10. But I think fans view top 10. I think fans view recruiting from the 6 through 12 rank a lot closer to like the 1, 2, 3 than in reality it actually is. Like the gap to me between like top 3 recruiting classes and 7, 8, 9, 10 is a lot larger than people think. Texas is trying to recruit in that 1, 2, 3 range, not the 6 range. And there's nothing wrong with recruiting at 6. There's lots of schools that would love to recruit at 6, but that's the difference between winning, being Alabama and Clemson on a yearly basis and LSU last year and being, no offense, Oklahoma and what they are, you have been for the past few years and such. So let's talk about why this might actually be very, very different for Texas than what it has been. Or just your thoughts. I'm just curious.
Well, I think I've been pretty honest. I've been pretty straightforward since, you know, they got announced, right? I said from the get-go, Sark's going to be as good as his offensive line coach. Okay, go hire, go bring Kyle Flood in. All right, good hire. Okay, so next step, you got to hire a good defensive coordinator. Okay, I'm going to go get Pete Kwiatkowski, I think is how you say it. Okay, great. Great hire. I mean, okay, whatever. So here's the thing, though, Philip, and here's what I love about Texas and the situation they're in, is they're in a win-win situation. which is what they're always in with a first year coach, right? You get a full year to sell your program, win, lose, draw, whatever. You get a full year. And guess what Sarkisian just did? He just put together one of the greatest offenses in college football history. So they're in a great situation.
I mean, literally, that national championship was just him saying, look what you can do here. They literally had a guy, a receiver, like commit to him at Texas at halftime.
The next day.
Sure. Whatever. Point is, literally, he was just like, do you want to do this? Yeah. Come to Texas. Okay.
Yeah. So, here's the thing with Texas and why, like, it's important to temper expectations. Okay. I put out a video clip today, and my comment was, I love football. Here's why. Alabama lined up in that play against Auburn and had equal numbers. There was no leverage. Nobody had leverage, no nothing. And the left tackle, the left guard, and the left in the center and the right guard just lined up and said, we're going to kick your ass. And they did. And they absolutely kicked Auburn's ass on that play. Texas doesn't have the guys to do that right now. They could in 2 to 3 years. Now, here's the thing. With the transfer portal, though, you can cut that to two. So, like, for me, whenever you're talking about Oklahoma's defense, right, like 2019 was year zero. Like, you've got to – Alex Grinch needs his guys in the system. This year was year one for Alex Grinch. So whenever you kind of take that perspective, like, Texas is in year zero this year. Like, there's things they need to accomplish. I put this out on Twitter, Philip, and this is unbelievable. Texas has not started a season 3-0 since 2012. That's 9 seasons. Damn. Okay. Texas, at the same time, too, here's what else is on this checklist. Here's next. Here's what's next for Sarkisian. Texas has not beaten Oklahoma State and TCU in the same year since TCU joined the Big 12. Okay. There's things like, that's what I'm saying with Texas fans and like me being on, like I said, I'm going to post and like broadening my horizons. I'm obviously joking around and feel like to literally dick around. Pardon my French there. You'll have to beat that one out. Literally like to mess around 24/7. But like in seriousness, like, I think you understand. I'm going to kind of put it to you. Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma right now that people are agitated with me with, whether it's Texas, whether it's Oklahoma State, whatever it is. Here's the point. Texas hasn't done things a blue blood does on a yearly basis in a long time, more than a decade. And Texas needs to understand that if you lose to Arkansas this year on the road, not only is that going to be embarrassing to the Big 12, but the thought of Texas being dunked on by Arkansas fans is so delightful. Like, and that's from a very middle ground, but like, we all enjoy, Texas fans need to understand, they bring it upon themselves. We all enjoy dunking on them because we've all heard for the last 8 years about how Texas is going to be this, Texas going to be that. Okay, so and to counter that this time, Texas, this is what you do. You go 3-0, or sorry, you go beat Louisiana. Was it you and I that had the Twitter exchange? Game by effing game. Like, take Texas, literally, they need to take it game by game because Louisiana's good. Billy Napier is going to come in guns a blazing that game one. And
assuming he doesn't take the Tennessee job, but yeah.
No one's taking the Tennessee job. But
I know, I was kidding.
Mike might, but we can get into that later. Anyways, that you go to Arkansas week three, and like, you, Texas can't lose that game from a momentum perspective.
That's week two.
I think it's week
two. They open Louisiana, then they go to Arkansas, and then they face Rice.
Okay, there you go. If you have it pulled up in front of you, I don't have it up in front of me. There you go. So, yeah, you play two tough games to start the year. Go 2-0. Like, okay, then after that, guess what? Beat TCU and Oklahoma State in the same year. Texas should not be losing to those two teams on a yearly basis. That's your brand. You've got talent. You've got every resource to use. And then here's the other thing, too. And this is something to point out about Texas. And, like, this is why the expectations are going to be gaudy, not this year, but because everybody, I think, understands what Oklahoma is turning into for this season. But, like, for 2022 even, like, whenever you're about to drop $50 to $55 million to fire a guy and then hire a new guy staff, that brings expectations. And, like, Kwiatkowski at Washington is going to need time, like, to get body types in there. Like, I know he went to Washington and immediately they were good. That is not normal. That if it happens at Texas, by God, I'm going to be bowing down on my knees and calling this guy a god. But if he goes to Texas with the secondary that they have built, the linebackers, I know Juwan Mitchell's coming back. He is very talented, probably one of the better returning players in the Big 12. But Overshawn's got to get better. They got good defensive linemen, but they lack a serious edge rusher. Like, they've got areas in that defense that don't necessarily fit what Kwiatkowski has. But with the transfer portal, with recruiting, those things can change, especially the portal. Those things can change within 2 years. It is now the new junior college. You are going to get player, you know, ready players that are played snaps in Power 5 football now. So it can change quick. So to wrap up my thoughts on Texas, Phillip, like, again, I think they're kind of capped in 2021. I think 9 wins is kind of just where they're at. You've got Oklahoma. You've got road games at Iowa State, road game at TCU. Haven't beaten them in a while. Oklahoma State's going to be better what people expect them to be. That's going to be a good game in Austin. And then don't sleep on Baylor. A good offensive coordinator, good offensive line coach. Their defense is going to be really, really talented. So I think, you know, and we can definitely – I would love to talk to you about the Big 12 next, and I want to get your perspective on what I'm about to say. But the Big 12 is going to be as strong as it's been in over a decade this year. The top four are really, really good. The 5-8 are good too. This is not a good year if you're Steve Sarkisian in Texas to come in with all these high expectations and then go 8-4. Just take it game by game. Go 2-0 to start the season. Beat Oklahoma State, beat TCU. And I think that's a successful year. Regardless of anything that else happens, if you can accomplish those two things, you feel really good about your future.
We are very excited to have a new sponsor for the 10-12 podcast to start 2021. And that is Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, specifically the Lawnmower 3.0. Now, I understand family jewels, weird thing to say, ha ha ha. We all love to make jokes about personal grooming. But let's get real for just a second. We've all tried. We've all struggled. It's not the easiest thing to do. Manscaped makes it easy. I'm not talking about going smooth as a baby's bottom. However you want it to be, whatever is most comfortable to you, I have a comfort level I have now been able to reach easier than ever before. I'm sure you have one as well. So do yourself a favor and go check out the Lawnmower 3.0. Third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. It's got a little LED light, which makes things easier to see. It's got a really quiet motor. It ain't loud. Easy to charge, easy to use, incredibly comfortable, incredibly well designed, specifically for you and me, guys. The Lawnmower is not the only thing that's great about them. They've got other trimming products, including for your nose and ear, which, let me tell you, as you get older, as I have, once you start dealing with those ear hairs, you're going to thank me for going to Manscaped. So go to manscaped.com, M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code 1012. Okay, 20% off, free shipping at manscaped.com when you use promo code 1012, T-E-N-1-2. You are going to like this. This is going to be something you are really happy to have in your arsenal. So, manscaped.com, promo code 1012, 20% off, free shipping. And let me just say, you are never going to be more comfortable than you will after a Manscaped shave. I mean, so this was, to your point on the Big 12, this was the right time to pull the plug, right?
Sure.
OU is expected to have an amazing season this year, okay? I think your point on Baylor is right. I don't think they're going to – I think the offense is going to take some time because they're going to have a lot of things they have to replace, but I think the defense at Baylor is going to be even better. Like, it shouldn't have been as good as it was in year one of Dave Aranda, and it's pretty dang good. I think Baylor will be better than people think. If TCU gets the offense figured out without as many chefs or cooks in the kitchen, like, the roster's not a problem. The talent is there. TCU's really good. Kansas State gets Skylar Thompson back. Let's not think about Kansas State after Skylar Thompson got hurt. Let's think about Kansas State before Skylar Thompson got hurt. Even if they're not great this year, the coaching there makes me think Kansas State's still going to be a pain in the ass. Iowa State's bringing back, like, all but two starters.
Hey, real quick. They're not going to be bad. Real quick. Yeah. Let me cut you off. Would Skylar Thompson be the only quarterback to beat Oklahoma 3 times? That's another hurdle Oklahoma has to climb next year, by the way.
Like, ever?
Vince Young did it. Josh Fields did it.
Not
twice.
Okay, because Brock Purdy didn't do it the first time, so...
Wait, no, Vince Young, did Vince Young do it twice? Vince Young, he played in 06?
Oh, man.
Man, that's, it's escaping me, but that's crazy to think. Like, Skylar Thompson, we can get back on topic. Skylar Thompson, if you look at his stats only in the Oklahoma games that he's played in his career, it is nuts. I don't know what it is, but the dude shows up. It's pretty crazy.
I think, but the point is, like, this was the year for Texas to pull the plug. This was to make the, if you're going to do it, you would rather start this in a year where expectations should be reasonable and the rest of the potential is going to be really good. Like, you'd rather, if we're going to start over and we're going to be down anyways because of it, we might as well be down in a year where everyone else is going to be good, so it's not as big a deal. We would rather get things going and hit and be really good at a time when maybe everyone else takes a step back. Like, TCU's going to be good. They're not going to be good 2 years in a row. Kansas State's going to be, like, I think to your point, like, Texas is going to be bad. Kansas is going to be bad. But I think to your point, like, the Big 12 will be solid. I think the Big 12 defense is just keep getting better. Yes, you can make the argument that the offenses weren't quite as good this year. But, folks, it's not as much as the national media wants to tell you. It really is more about the defense getting better. Oh,
they
we didn't even say anything about West Virginia.
Back. They will bend over their back not to give the Big 12 any credit. The Big 12 has six of the top 15 to 20 defensive coordinators in football in their conference. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear Philip, you've seen me. I am so beyond that. Like, the more anytime someone pops up on Twitter, I am just immediate. Like, I not usually like this, but lately it's just nonsense. Like, if you look, the Big 12 had, I believe, four top 30 defenses or four top 25 defenses year, an SP plus. Like, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Iowa State had top 20. I believe TCU was in the top 20 as well. So it's just
Because it was three of them were like 16, 17. I think it was like TCU. I think there were five in the top 20 because TCU, Iowa State, Oklahoma State were all like 16, 17, 18.
Yeah, Oklahoma was
in S&P plus.
Oklahoma was in that range too. So I mean, it's crazy. Like, I want you to think about this though, because you actually have a better perspective than I do. Like, when I go think about like Big 12 football, right? Like, 08 was really when that raid started to infiltrate the conference and everybody was running a air raid kind of style system. Texas obviously was still more pro style. Oklahoma was like a pro raid. I don't remember Kevin Wilson, what he did was magical. But like, you're seeing these offenses now. Like, Iowa State and Oklahoma are getting two tight ends on the field. Oklahoma State's using a tight end. Kansas State gets big personnel. Texas is going to be big this year. Yeah, like, we could definitely, and that's the other point I didn't touch on about Texas, but like, everybody's getting bigger. Like, they're doing that because the Big 12 is getting better defensive linemen. Like, go look at Kansas State last year. Kansas State has two NFL defensive linemen in Khalid Duke and Wyatt Hubert. Oklahoma State's got two to three guys. Oklahoma, next year, Oklahoma could get six guys drafted from their defensive line. And if you want to add Ronnie Perkins, it would have been seven if he would have come back. Like, the league defensively is getting better defensive coordinators. They're getting better head coaches. They're developing more talent. And whenever the joke, you know, Iowa State made the joke, right? You know, five-star culture, whatever, five-star hearts, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, for real, like, the Big 12 is turning these kids that just no one is even batting an eye on to go get. And at Iowa State, at Kansas State, at Oklahoma State, at Baylor, at TCU, West Virginia, I mean, Stills brothers were big-time recruits, but everybody is turning – good players into really talented NFL players on defense. And that's just a trend that's going to continue. And as long as that continues, the gap between the Big 12 and the SEC, whatever recruiting rankings say, it's really not that big.
So Parker Fleming of Purple Theory told me gave me his weird pitch for when he wants to get on his podcast. And I've been thinking a lot about it. And I've been thinking about this for a little while with the Big 12. You know, you see the NFL has used to be college stole from the NFL. And over the past few years, you've seen that the NFL started stealing from college, literally taking more college coaches because they want to do what college is doing. But here's the deal. They're not stealing from the SEC. They're not stealing from the ACC or the Big Ten. They've been stealing from the Big 12. I think what the Big 12 is, the Big 12 is the conference that, not that they don't care about recruiting, SEC cares about recruiting, and that's it. And keeping, you know, insular, we can only hire SEC coaches because they are the only ones who know how to coach in the SEC, blah, blah, blah.
Well, no, but they have to keep all the cooks in the kitchen, right?
It's the inbreeding.
Yeah, you can't have one leap out and then start talking, you know?
Yeah, everyone will know what we're doing. You recruit. I get it. But what the Big 12 to me has always been about, it's not that they don't care about recruiting. It's we are going to I think they are the experimental conference. I think the Big 12 is the conference that's always looking to give themselves the coaching and schematic edge over other conferences. And so they experiment. So they're always ahead of the game, but nobody gives them credit until the SEC steals it and uses it with all their more talented rosters. It's like, oh, see, this is great football. And you're like, no, this is what's been done for a decade. Oh, the Big 12 is already on to the next step of figuring out how to defend all this stuff, which is why their defenses are getting better, and they're not putting as many offensive points. So that just means that their offense must not be as good anymore, because you have too many people on the national stage who don't actually watch either college football at all or the Big 12 who have very strong opinions about said conference.
It's the most frustrating thing. And like, I want to touch in on like real quick on the Sarkisian deal, because I think it's important, and you'll agree with me on this. Like, it's going to be 2 to 3 years. Texas is going to be good. Like, I am all aboard that. If they give it time and they don't start putting these unreal expectations on them.
And like, they stay out of the way. They got to stay out of the way. They have to stay. They cannot have all the boosters want to get their fingers in on, well, I think you should, and I stay, leave Sarkisian alone for 3 years. Leave him alone. Mm-hmm. The worst thing that happened to Tom Herman was having his year two be as successful as it was, because it screwed up the whole timeline. They were ahead of schedule in year two. And I said that on the show. They were ahead of schedule. They overachieved, and it was going to screw them up moving forward, and it did.
Yeah, and when you add in the fact that, you know, you don't bring – and here's the smart thing about Sark. So he goes, gets a good offensive line coach, right? Like, that was – had to happen. Like, they – good God, I can't watch Christian Jones. I hope no one that – listens to Texas knows the kid or anything and tells him I said this, but I can't watch him play football much longer, man. Like, he was just getting hated every game at right tackle. Like, there was the Oklahoma game. Nick Benito was literally just running around him. Like, it was what it's, you can't, Texas can't win football games with guys like that playing. They just can't. Last year, they kind of had two of them. They got some of those younger guys in, and Jake Majors and the Ondrich. I don't know how to say the other part of his name, the other tackle. But you know, there's pieces there. Quarterback room's questionable. I'm aboard that the Connor Weigman kid that Oklahoma's offered. That's from the Houston area. If Texas can land him, he's a big Texas fan. That's a huge get. But even then, if I was Texas, like, if you know, you find out pretty quickly, spring ball, start of this season, that Casey Thompson and Hudson Card aren't it. Like, you start mining to figure out which quarterbacks are entering the transfer portal, bring in a grad transfer for 2022. If you were good, you're good, which is great, but your year is 2023. And in 2023, if Oklahoma and Texas are on the same path as it kind of looks like they are right now, Philip, man, oh man, I'm going to be excited. Here's all I ask. Here's all I want. I want Oklahoma in Texas to be year in, year out, top five matchup in the Cotton Bowl. Because like people just don't, like, I know, have you been to OU Texas game before?
No, okay.
Dude, it is the most, like, this year with how high the suspense was in this game without the fans in the stands, and when all of the fans just basically said, screw COVID, COVID's not real today on this Saturday, and they all started combining at the end zones. Like, and just the passion in the game, man. Like, if it was a top five, top 10 matchup year in and year out, like, that makes everybody in the conference look better. There's benefits to it for everybody. And I'm just like, that's all I want. Like really just give me, if you can give me 1 year in 2023 where Oklahoma is a national championship and Texas is a national championship contender, and like Oklahoma State at that point, that with Illingworth and this next wave of players that they're developing will be on the offense, will be older, the Presleys, those guys will be older. Oklahoma State will be better. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm realistic. Like Oklahoma in 2022, again, we're talking Alex Grinch has to be the defensive coordinator. Now you're going down a rabbit hole that I've gone down where I'm like, Oklahoma could lose 18 players off the starters this year, lose their defensive coordinator, probably lose some assistants because Grinch is going to take an offensive guy with him somewhere. Like, Oklahoma in 2022 could look like what LSU did, unless Lincoln stays. You know, and I'm not talking about like the season going as
you're not hiring Bo Pelini.
Sure, yeah, but my point is that you're talking about mass exodus from the coaches because everything's so good. But there's a lot of that's down the line, and I don't know if you want to get anything else in regards to the Big 12, but it's just I'm so damn excited. Like, I know it's January, but it's like thinking Iowa State and Oklahoma could be a top five matchup in Norman. Man, like that is something that hasn't happened. Like, think about the Big 12. The last time was OU-TCU in 2017. We've had a game, like an interconference game like that. And like, that's so good for the conference. Like Oklahoma, yes. Bedlam and Stillwater, that's going to be great. Like that's going to be – Oklahoma State's defense is going to be good. Hopefully Trace Ford gets back earlier than expected because I think that he is going to be a big difference. If I – tell me if I'm wrong. I think the difference with Oklahoma State with Trace Ford next year because they just don't have Calvin Bundage or anybody else really to kind of play that role. I just – like there's just Baylor's defense. You've got me gushing over here. There are so many players. Okay, where I'm the direction I'm going and what I'm doing next, Philip. There are so many players from this conference to be watching. Oh my lord!
I'll say this for OSU: it's not just getting Trace Ford. Hopefully, he'll be back. It's Colin Clay came in from Arkansas, didn't play because he got hurt before the season. So if you have Colin Clay and Trace Ford healthy, with Israel Antoine getting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's wrap on this. I've got 10. We're gonna start doing this quick fire questions. So just quick answers. We don't need explanations. There are some Big 12 Oklahoma questions in here, and there's some that have nothing to do with it. So we're gonna start the imaginary clock that doesn't matter. And here we go. Okay. Number one, go to Waffle House order.
Not a Waffle House guy.
Okay. Great start. Best new Big 12 coaching hire.
How far back do I go? Is it the last 2 years?
This offseason. Not head coach, just coach, period. Offseason. All Texas' new staff. Yeah, all Texas' staff. Oh, Baylor's new guys.
Kyle Flood. No if ands or buts about it. Hey, you know what's funny? Hey, I know you said real quick. Real quick, though, what's funny is you know what he's already done? He's already gone back and offered all the 5 stars he offered at Alabama. I don't know if you saw this. It's the same exact guys Oklahoma goes after. It's going to get fun. Real fun.
Number three, favorite Mel Brooks film?
Patriot. Right? Am I thinking wrong person? Probably wrong. Mel Gibson's the guy I'm thinking of. Mel Brooks. I'm not a movie guy. Mel Brooks, help me out here.
Oh, my God.
Help me out here, Philip.
Frankenstein, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah, I'm out. Not a movie guy.
Oh, my gosh. This is going... player OU will miss the most in 2021?
Oh, Ronnie Perkins. No ifs, okay. Ands, or buts about it.
What would your parents have named you if you had been born a girl?
Something with a K, probably Caitlin.
Okay. More challenging non-conference game for OU this year, at Tulane or Nebraska?
Oh, Tulane. You already know my answer. On the road, week one in New Orleans.
I know the answer. I just like asking it because it's fun. Nebraska shade. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Okay. Lincoln Riley's favorite pizza topping.
Pizza topping?
Mm-hmm.
He seems like just a real easy, like, I just want to go get me a pepperoni pizza kind of guy. I don't see him. I mean, because he's like a mountain person. I don't know if those two things are correlated, but he seems like kind of more laid back. I'm not going to get exotic kind of deal. So I will say just normal pepperoni pizza.
All right. Do the OU basketball team make the dance?
I'm not informed enough. Like, I think they're good enough to. I just don't know, like, with COVID and they've set a date for the tournament, like, I don't know if they're going to get enough wins in. Like, they got to beat Kansas on Saturday. I just don't know enough. Like, I don't know how the rest is shaping up with COVID in terms of the conferences to really kind of give you a good answer. But they're a good enough team to. They can go win a game in the tournament.
Agreed. Is Texas back?
If you ask me a year from today, the answer probably is yes, and I'm dead ass.
Okay.
I'm serious. I'm with you. Like, people that just don't understand, like, you get Alabama blood for the recruiting trail. You've got two innovative coaching staffs. You've got all the resources in the world. You're the name brand in one of the deepest, richest states for recruiting. There's just so many positives for Texas right now. It's like, I don't want to just get the expectations sky high because I said, and I'll finish with this again, Philip, Texas has not started 3-0 in a football season since 2012. It's going to be a decade if it doesn't happen this year, a decade.
There we go.
I hate to see
Keegan, that. Keegan, I'm I'm sad you won't be on the Sooners Wire beat, but that's okay. That doesn't mean we won't still enjoy having you on to talk college football and talk the Sooners and talk other things that might be related to whatever it is you're going to be doing next, of course, which we'll find more about later and talk about some more then. In the meantime, where can everybody check out the stuff that you do covering the Sooners?
Yeah, you can just follow me at Keegan Renault, and it's KEGANRENEAU. I promise you it's less annoying come football season, but you will find me tweeting a lot, and you'll be seeing random film clips out right now just because, how do I say this? I've gotten my hands on Philip of like the ultimate all-22 drive. Every team, every game, it's going to take me, I'm going to probably go through all of it by the end of this offseason. I can't wait.
Yeah, so that would be, you can follow Keegan, check out his OnlyFans. It's kind of fun. Don't worry, it's not weird. And I kid. Of course, your Patreon. And buddy, look forward to talking to you again.
Oh, absolutely. Always fun.